Easter season draws to a close with these two great feasts we celebrated last weekend and this weekend in Ascension and in Pentecost. They're divine mysteries in many ways that illuminate the life of God and the working of the Trinity. With the Ascension, the Son returns to the right side of the Father, and in Pentecost, the Spirit proceeds from the Father and the Son, blessing all of creation. They're divine mysteries. They tell us something about the life of God, but there's a way, too, to think of the Ascension and Pentecost somehow as illuminating the human mystery, the mystery of our own lives. When Christ comes among us, when he's born into our world, he reveals to us the face of God, the life of God, but he also reveals to us, in a sense, what it means to be human. We come into the world needing to know this, to have an answer to this question. What does it mean to be human? What does it look like to be a human person? And because Christ is truly God and truly human, he reveals to us what it means to be a human being, how we are to strive, how we are to live, after whom we are to fashion our lives. So I'd offer to you today, as this wonderful Easter season draws to a close, that we can think of ourselves in our own way as being agents of Ascension and Pentecost in our world. What does this look like? How can we do this? How can we be an agent of Ascension in our world? We're called, in a sense, to be moved upward, to be uplifting throughout this life. It's not just the case that as our bodies physically grow, we're moving upward. But throughout all of life, however long it may be, our spirits continue to grow, and it's an upward movement for us. We're intended to be agents of Ascension in our world, to lift up not only ourselves, but other people as well. One of the paradoxes of this is that the best thing we can do to uplift ourselves is to uplift other people, to lift them up, to bestow life, to give life in the world around us to other people. Hopefully we do this to people who are close to us, our family and our friends, but it's just it's important to do this with all of humanity, with every person that we meet, even the stranger, people who are different from us, people we don't know as well. If we move through this life, we make it our goal to be an agent of Ascension, to lift up other people. It's the best thing we can do for our own lives, and it's a great testament to leave in our world. We think to ourselves, does the world need this of me? We know the answer to it. There's a great need in the world for Ascension, and as Christians, we're called to be agents of it in our world. It's a human mystery, in a way, to find the best way we can apply our lives to this mission. We're also called to be agents of Pentecost, to leave the Holy Spirit. When we move through life, many new chapters that we face, to always leave the presence of the Spirit when we go, when we move on. We have this little exchange that we say in Mass several times, the Lord be with you and with your spirit. We move on to what's next. It's just a few words in that little exchange, but there's an enormously powerful meaning. It's an expression that doesn't just belong in church, it belongs in the world. Our homes, our workplaces, our lives, belongs everywhere. Our city, this little exchange. We're supposed to live in a sense that our life expresses this. The Lord be with you. And when we respond to people that we meet, friends and family, but strangers, people who are different from us, we're supposed to offer this by the way we live our lives. And with your spirit, acknowledging that the Holy Spirit is a part of each of us, a part of each of our lives, even if we don't acknowledge it, if we don't see it, if we don't understand it, by the manner in which we leave our lives, we leave the Spirit, and we acknowledge the Spirit in one another. Today's gospel is magnificent. I think for me personally, it's one of the most compelling visuals to picture this moment. It comes from the beginning of John chapter 20. And it begins on the evening of that first day of the week when the doors were locked where the disciples were. Jesus entered, stood in their midst, and said, "Peace be with you." Just a few words, John captures this very powerful moment. It's dark. The door is locked. Doesn't just describe the disciples in space and time. It's, in a sense, a metaphysical commentary on their lives. It's dark. Their lives are dark. Their lives are locked off from one another and from the world at the moment in which Christ enters. And he says to them, not just once, but twice, "Peace be with you." Why are the doors locked? Why is it dark? Because they're afraid. They're trapped. It says in the gospel they're afraid of the Jews, but they're afraid of the Romans. They're afraid of the crowd. They're afraid of many different parties. And very possibly, they're afraid of Jesus himself. Because if what he says is true, and he will rise from the dead, as he's told them several times, what are the odds he's going to be pleased with them when he encounters the disciples again, in light of the ways in which they abandoned him during his passion and death? How could they have any reason to expect that he's going to be pleased to see them again? They're thinking of human beings, about how a human being would respond to being betrayed. And they're right in a sense, but they're not thinking of a human being, they're thinking of God. So how powerful is it that Christ would say to them twice, in entering in their midst, peace be with you. It's probably one of the largest collective sighs in history, peace be with you. It's a fascinating moment to imagine. And it's one that, even though it comes before Pentecost, it foreshadows the coming of the Holy Spirit. Spirit who comes in today's first reading, Acts chapter 1, descending upon the world and changing the world, human history entirely, overthrowing darkness, chaos, hostility, animosity, misunderstanding, confusion, all these things in the coming of the third person of the Trinity. It's a fascinating moment to think of. Reminds me in a way of a book that I read when I was in college. It was in a senior seminar called The Invention of Peace. It was a little book by a political theorist, and the idea of it was pretty bleak. It was basically that, for all intents and purposes, peace is the absence of conflict. That's the best we can hope for as human beings. Peace is something like a state of neutrality. It's a stalemate, a ceasefire, it's a truce between hostility. It doesn't have any positive meaning, but it's the best we can hope for. That we're basically even, we're neutral towards one another. That's a bleak way to think of the world. But in a way, it helps us to appreciate the importance of the coming of the Holy Spirit. There are many times before the Spirit comes that Christ speaks of the Advocate. One of the most beautiful places in John 14, when he's talking about the coming of the Advocate, he says, "Peace I leave you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give it to you. Not as the world gives, do I give it to you." What does that line mean? It's kind of a fascinating little line. The world gives, at best, absence of conflict. That's the best that we're capable of as human beings by our own merits. A sense of general uneasiness. We're not at war with one another. Maybe we can hope for that. But God gives something greater. God doesn't give the absence of conflict. God gives a person, burning with charity, the Holy Spirit, into the world. God gives not an idea. God gives a person, two persons, to each of us. God grants the Holy Spirit, the fullness of life. We say in the Creed of the Holy Spirit that the Spirit is the Lord, the giver of life, the giver of peace in our world, which we need so badly. Important to think of the Holy Spirit in this way. If the world gives conflict, hopefully its absence, God gives a person to persons. And what is the effect that the Spirit has on persons? Just one example, it's the first one in the scriptures, is the disciples themselves. We get to know them in the Gospels, their shortcomings, the ways that they stumble, they struggle with understanding the message that Christ gives to them. And yet, by the end of the Gospels, after Christ's resurrection, after they receive the Spirit and in the Acts of the Apostles, we hardly recognize these people. They've been transformed. They're altogether different. How do we account for that? That they're such different people after the coming of the Holy Spirit? We can't understand it without the Holy Spirit. It's the Holy Spirit that makes them change people and that makes us transformed men, women, and children. We can't do it ultimately without the Holy Spirit, but it is the Spirit who transforms us, changes us to be the people that God is calling us to be. In that passage in John's Gospel, the Lord speaks of the Spirit as the Advocate. Advocare means to call to the side. The Greek word for the Holy Spirit is the same, paraclete. Parakaleo means to call to the side. It's a very beautiful way to think of the Holy Spirit. It's my favorite way to think of the Spirit. What does it mean? by virtue of our baptism as Christians, by virtue of the sacramental life that strengthens us, we are invited as Christians, we're empowered to call the Holy Spirit to our side. And there are many moments in life in which that's precisely what we need, the Spirit to be at our side, to be an advocate, a defendant, to be a source of inspiration, guidance, stability, wisdom in our lives. Why is this so important? It's important because very many times, what's beside us in life, as we look to the world, as we read news headlines, it's hostility, confusion, anger, hatred, jealousy, all these vices of the world that cling to us as human beings, we find at our side at a moment's notice. And if there are so many ways that we can fall short of what God asks of us and have these vulnerabilities present themselves in our minds and in our hearts, it's all the more important, it's necessary to call the Spirit to the side, to be with us, whatever we face in life. If we have nothing else except the Holy Spirit, we have everything, because the Spirit leads us to Christ, and Christ is always inviting us to His Father. If we have everything, but not the Holy Spirit, we're irretrievably lost in this life. If we build our lives on the Holy Spirit, we're going to make something of life, and we're going to do it together, because the Christian project is something we can't do in isolation. It takes each of us coming together to build the kingdom that God is calling us to build. The Holy Spirit is still with us today. We should never forget that the same Spirit that changed the history of the world at Pentecost is still with us, still dwelling in us in these days. And the Spirit is no less important now than it was then. And it's all the more important that in the light of humanity's brokenness and frailty, we enlist the Holy Spirit to be at our sides for the glory of God.